Hello there, and welcome to Woman of Grit, a podcast that holds space for women to have authentic conversations about our intersectional challenges and where we elevate women's voices, celebrate their strengths, and honor their resilience. I'm your host, Dr. Ahn, the gritpreneur and woman of grit. Come on in, we saved a seat at the table for you.
Today's guest is a registered nutritional therapist and beauty therapist who has dedicated over 30 years of her life to the health and wellness industries. She specializes in and is passionate about helping women navigate the transformative journey of menopause on a global scale. Through her online clinic, she empowers her clients to make bespoke changes to their diet, health, and lifestyle, allowing them to harness their hormones and rediscover their confidence and sparkle. Let's welcome Allison Blood to Woman of Grit podcast. Hi, Allison. Welcome. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm really good. It's a pleasure to be on your podcast today. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm going to start things off with my signature question, because of course we're called the Woman of Grit podcast. And grit was defined by American psychologist and academic Dr. Angela Lee Duckworth as passion and perseverance for our meaningful long-term goals despite obstacles and setbacks. However, if you had to choose between passion or perseverance, which would you choose and why? There's no right answer.
I think I would choose passion. I mean, it's a huge word, isn't it? Passion.
Yes.
I mean, I suppose it means different things to different people. But
right.
For me, you know, I am a very passionate person about life. And you know, we only have one very short period on this planet, really, don't we? And I'm very passionate about doing everything that I want to do and really helping as many people as possible in the work that I do, you know, helping women with health issues. Because being passionate and achieving things through your passion gives me great satisfaction and joy.
I like that. So let's pivot and let's talk about menopause. The time in a woman's life that marks the end of our menstrual cycles. Clinically, it's diagnosed after a woman has gone 12 months without a menstrual period. So menopause can happen in a woman's 40s or 50s, but the average age in the United States is about 51. But clearly there are women who fall outside of these age ranges for various reasons. So while menopause is a natural biological process, the physical symptoms such as hot flashes or heat flushes and emotional symptoms of menopause may disrupt a woman's sleep, lower her energy, or affect their emotional health. There are many effective treatments available, from lifestyle adjustments to hormone therapy. And there's a lot of confusion about that area. That is why I'm excited you're here today, and your mission is to help women worldwide manage the negative symptoms of menopause and reclaim their health. First, tell us about your journey in the health and wellness industry. What led you to it?
Yeah, I've been in the health and wellness industry for over 30 years now. And I think the first thing that really triggered me to look at my own health and well-being was when I was a teenager, because I actually had very bad acne, you know, during puberty. And it's hard enough, isn't it, being an adolescent with confidence. And, you know, it's a difficult time because of all hormonal changes, and having such bad skin really knocked my confidence. But I decided that I didn't want to just, you know, go down the medicine route. I really wanted to understand what was going on in my body. Then so I started looking at nutrition, I started looking at skincare, and I really improved my skin quite considerably by using the power of nutrition, lifestyle, and skincare products. So the beginning of my career, I actually trained and became an esthetician, working specifically with hormonal skin health. And I soon very quickly realize that, you know, you can obviously do a lot from the aesthetic side, but you really need to work from the inside as well. So that's when I went back to university and studied nutritional science and became a nutritional therapist. And ever since then, you know, I've really been focusing on helping women with hormonal health during perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, because it's an area where, you know, women can really suffer. It can be terrible. Some women just glide through it and don't have any symptoms. And then there's some but it's a real, like, life-changing event. It's knowledge, isn't it? I think there's so many women in the world, even now, that don't truly understand what menopause is, because we don't really talk about it, do we? We talk about puberty and what happens then, you know, the hormonal events in a woman's life, pregnancy. But menopause is kind of not really spoken. It's getting better. I don't know how it is in your part of the world, but in Europe, where I live, there's a bit of a menopause revolution going on. Women have just, like, I've had enough now, you know, I want help, I want support. So it is being spoke about more, but there's a lot more that needs to be done.
So I was just thinking, when you were talking about being a teenager, I was one of those teenagers. I was 13 and my face was just covered. I tried all kinds of things. People would tell me this. I was like just flapping in the wind. You know, at 13, very impressionable. People just telling me this. I swing this way. Don't eat this. I stop eating this. Eat this. I eat this. I mean, it was just, like you said, it's a really delicate time in a young person's life, in a teenager's life, you know, with so much else going on, just so many other changes, then you have this thing. But then, you know, you talked about some women just literally glide through it. They wake up one morning, it's like they slept through menopause, and they wake up on the other end. And then there's just some women who struggle terribly. I would say I was somewhere in the middle. I was somewhere in the middle in terms of the symptoms that I had. And so we'll talk about that a little later. Could you share with us some of the most common challenges women face during this transformative phase of life and how your approach addresses those challenges? I think you touched on some of that already in your previous answer. Is there anything else you want to add to the challenges that women face and also how you approached those challenges?
Yeah, there's so many different things, because it's very individual, but the most common symptoms that most women start to experience in perimenopause, which is the beginning of the transition, which on average is around the age of 45, but it can absolutely start earlier or later, is the hot flashes, sleep problems, you know, because of night sweats. A lot of women find it very difficult to sleep. They'll wake up, and I mean, lack of sleep obviously affects everything, doesn't it? If you're
right,
weight gain is very common, and also like the emotional side of it, which, you know, myself, I'm in perimenopause, and I think that's probably my area that I've noticed the most, is like mood swings, irritability, and, you know, this brain fog. You know, you suddenly feel like your brain just isn't working like it used to. You forget what you want to say. That's very, very common. And I think a big symptom that is really up there that I see with majority of my clients is fatigue, just exhaustion of not having the energy to really live your life the way that you want to. And I think a key thing that we have to remember here is that estrogen and progesterone is a really, really key. It's like a master hormone. It's always really been known just as a sex hormone, but estrogen is so important for virtually all bodily processes. We see changes in digestion. It's the master of metabolic homeostasis. So it's not surprising when the levels drop and decline, you know, that we feel exhausted, that mitochondria, which are our power, it's like the energy factories in every cell, are affected by the lack of estrogen.
Right.
You know, so I think it's knowledge, isn't it, that women understand that they're not going crazy, that there is a reason that they're feeling like this. And I mean, some of the things that I apply to my clients, we work on the nutritional side, depending on, you know, their symptoms. We work on like mindset. Stress management is huge, because again, because of the hormone declines, we can suddenly start to feel very anxious and, you know, just really questioning everything in life and not as happy as we used to be. And then movement, exercise is a key piece in that. Eating a whole foods diet, getting rid of sugar and inflammatory foods that really cause inflammation in the body. So it's really like looking at many different aspects and putting all these things into place in a program and really giving the person the support that they need during this time to make these lifestyle changes, really.
Right. One of the reasons I decided in season three, I'm going to pivot a little bit because I am board certified in lifestyle medicine. And when I started looking over your bio, your website, and some of the things that you have done, your area of focus, I said you would make a perfect guest once I pivot, you know, to incorporating more lifestyle medicine, because like literally everything you just said in the last 5 minutes was hitting on one or more of the six pillars in lifestyle medicine. You know, you talk about some of the symptoms that women experience. I said, I'm somewhere in the middle. I didn't glide through it. And it wasn't so horrible that, you know, I couldn't function. But definitely for me, the hot flushes, I literally had a fan running 24/7, literally as long as my face, you know, was getting some breeze, I did okay. But you talked about weight gain, and I'm going to say it's not just weight gain, it's where this weight wants to be. I started gaining weight in parts of my body that I did not expect. I mean, I should have expected it, but the belly fat, okay? The belly fat, I'd never had belly fat before, but the belly fat was quite shocking to me that our bodies could change so much. And then you talk about inflammatory foods. Whole foods in lifestyle medicine is really big, mostly plant-based. And so for me, I eventually figured out what my inflammatory food was, and it is processed sugar. For me, what really gets my body completely out of whack is processed sugar. So I can have healthy carbohydrates with lots of fiber, and I'll do just fine. But the moment I start doing highly processed carbohydrates, my body starts to retain water, fluids, to the point where I start having pain in my feet. So let's talk about the menopausal symptoms that so many women experience, yet we don't talk about often enough. With regards to the physiology of it, most research suggests, as you mentioned, that the hot flushes occur when the decreased estrogen levels cause our body's thermostat, which is in the brain, in the hypothalamus, to become more sensitive to even the slightest change in body temperature. So when the hypothalamus in the brain thinks that the body's too warm, it starts this chain of events to cool us down, so that sweating that we do, the body's way of trying to cool us down, even though it's maybe reading the signals a little wrong, or it's just hypersensitive. And so we know that this fluctuation of estrogen in the peri and menopausal period is a major driver of the hot flashes, heat flashes that so many women experience. Nutrition, like you have already mentioned, played a really important role in my life with regards to some of the most worrisome symptoms for me was the hot flushes. And literally, you know, here in the US, our food, especially our meats, have a lot of hormones in it. So one of the things I did just on my own, I stopped eating meat and chicken about a 6-month period. Literally within a week of stopping, my symptoms resolved. It was that quick. I used to do fish and seafood. And so after that time ended, I did go back to eating meat and chicken, and my symptoms never escalated to where they were before. My thought was that I was introducing less external hormones into my body. And it's that fluctuation that really triggers the hot flushes. As a registered nutritional therapist, you emphasize the importance of making bespoke changes to diet, health, and lifestyle. Can you share some actionable tips or strategies that we women can incorporate into our daily lives to better support our hormonal balance and overall well-being during menopause? Obviously, women have different symptoms. Some things will work better for some women than others. So what are some strategies actionable tips that women could incorporate into their daily lives to better support hormonal balance and overall well-being during the peri and menopausal period.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you said then. Yeah, strategies. When we look at nutrition, a key thing, and this maybe sounds very basic, but is ensure hydration. Yeah, but everyone says drink water, and it may say, oh yeah, drink water, but we don't. Well, the majority of people don't actually hydrate their bodies enough. And a really interesting, this is, they've done research on this, that as a woman ages, we don't fully understand it, but something happens with our thirst mechanism. And we don't get the sensation of thirst as much as we did when we were younger. So maybe you are actually quite dehydrated, but your body's not telling you to drink. So it's really important, water, for all bodily functions, and not only for maintaining good hormonal balance. On average, it's very difficult to say, depending on how active you are, but it should be around 8 glasses of water a day. You know, just water, not you know, fizzy drinks. All of those like processed sugary drinks are terrible. You know, you don't want to drink sugar. And it's been again shown in research that all the fizzy drinks that are high in sugar can trigger off hot flashes and menopausal symptoms.
So let me jump right in there. You talk about fizzy drinks. Is fizzy water okay? Because I really like just like a soda water, no sugar in it. Just sometimes my tongue craves that burn I get from the carbonation. So it's just straight fizzy water. Okay, then?
Yeah, fizzy, as long as it's just water with bubbles in and nothing else. Because there's quite a lot, aren't there, on the market now that have sparkling water with a little bit of taste or just water. And I mean, you can make it at home, can't you, if you have a
machine.
Because it does, like, you know, you sometimes have to perk your water up a bit, don't you, with bubbles?
Yeah.
Another great idea is to put like frozen fruit, you know, have some strawberries or blackberries or whatever in the freezer and just put them in your water instead of ice. It just gives it a bit more of a kind of festive feeling if you
get it. Yes.
The best diet, and this comes out in research, is a Mediterranean style diet. This has been shown for menopausal women to really help manage symptoms. It's really what you were talking about before, you know, when you were eating really that sort of diet, because it's very rich in plant-based foods, very low in meat, fish, seafood. And then your wonderful healthy fats like olive oil, avocados, nuts and seeds, etc. You know, you really want to base your meals around this style of eating, and it doesn't have to be complicated. People are busy, aren't they? We're all stressed and overwhelmed, and we haven't got time to spend hours in the kitchen, but it really doesn't have to be difficult.
Right.
Well, the best thing that you can do for your health is to avoid all these ultra processed foods, because they are toxic and they don't really give any nutritional value, and they cause inflammation and, you know, many, many other detrimental things in the body. And unfortunately, the food environment we're living in at the moment, it's difficult, isn't it, to navigate, because these sort of things are everywhere. Everyone revolves around food.
And I think the packaging can be very deceptive.
Yeah.
You know, you're not even sure what it is you're eating sometimes. It's so complicated. You're reading, you're like, what is that? We both have, I would say, kind of like a scientific background, you in nutrition and me in medicine. But sometimes I look at the label and I can't tell you really what's in there. So yeah, it's complicated.
It's fascinating with ingredients. And I totally agree with you. Some of them you think, what is that? And yes, my recommendation would be, if you don't understand what the ingredients is, then you shouldn't really be eating it. If you can't pronounce and don't know what it is, it shouldn't be in your body.
Yes.
Just buy whole foods, you know, like vegetables, a food that you look at and you know what it is. And it's more about mindset, isn't it? It's choosing. I choose to eat foods that nourish my body.
Right.
Another important issue with nutrition when we think of menopause is, you know, you really have to look after your gut bacteria. because again, declining estrogen affects the microbiome, which is the gut bacteria. So really eating your fermented foods like your kimchi, sauerkraut, etc. And then avoiding stimulants, because these can really trigger off menopausal symptoms. So things like caffeine related drinks, or there's nothing wrong. I've got nothing against coffee's fine. If you've got sleep issues, then maybe you should limit it, but see how you are with coffee. I think if you find that when you drink coffee, it triggers a hot flash, then, you know, maybe just avoid that for a while. But, you know, right. Energy drinks and you know, stimulants really aren't the friend of a menopausal woman.
Right.
Alcohol is not the friend of a menopausal woman.
And I'm glad you mentioned alcohol, because it's one of the things that it's almost instantaneous. You know, I take a glass of an alcoholic beverage and I immediately feel hot. I have to acknowledge, you know, in the United States, especially in the inner city, they're food deserts. People living in an area where they literally cannot get fresh food. You think in these United States, there are people living in parts of the country that is a food desert. They cannot get fresh foods. I know more and more community organizers are trying to literally grow wherever you have a patch of land, you grow some food. I live in Maryland. And in the summertime, the county I live in has a program where you could rent a piece of land and grow food. And I have a friend who literally does that all summer. She grows vegetables. But I think for her, it's because of where she was born and where she grew up. We're both from Cameroon, and she grew up actually going to the farm and doing that kind of work. But somebody who lives in an inner city has never grown plants in their life, and if you throw them out there, they don't know necessarily what to do. So I just wanted to acknowledge that there are some places where it is easier to get the packaged foods, it is cheaper for economic reasons, they can stretch their dollar further. And then you also talked about the gut bacteria. You mentioned kimchi, fermented cabbage and stuff like that, which, you know, most of us know about probiotics, so the healthy gut bacteria. And something I learned not that long ago was the prebiotic, which is the food for the probiotic. And the fiber is so important, because the probiotic, you know, people take all these capsules, you know, lactobacillus and all that stuff. We, you know, want to augment our probiotics, but you put them in your body, if you don't feed them the prebiotics, and guess what happens? Those probiotics, the healthy bacteria, die. So when you mention the kimchi, plants are our only source of fiber, and that's a prebiotic. So I thought talk a little bit about that. Any thoughts on anything I just said?
Yeah, I love fiber. You know, fiber is, you could do a whole podcast on fiber.
Yes, on fiber.
It's so important, and it's something again that we really don't consume enough of. I mean, fiber it keeps the whole digestive system, you know, moving like it should. And when we look at women's health and hormonal health, we need to remove the used estrogens. So when you have hormones in your body, you need to be able to detoxify the estrogens and remove them, eliminate them from the body. And one of the key areas to do that is through eating fiber. And things like, you know, cruciferous vegetables, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts are wonderful for female hormone health. And there's a really fascinating research being done now on something called the estrobolome. And the estrobolome is a form of, or a type of gut bacteria that they found is specifically needed for the regulation of estrogen in the body. The gut microbiome really is a fascinating area. So feeding these gut bugs, as if want of a better word, is so crucial for overall health.
I'm hypothesizing that personal growth and development, which is what I do right now, is so intricately linked to lifestyle medicine. Is somebody in the right mindset to do all those things that we expect them or we recommend they do in lifestyle medicine in terms of their diet, avoiding substances, stress management, sleep. We talked about sleep. So definitely, I think I'll be reaching out to you again when I launch that because your insight is really, really vast and your expertise I will need. So I'm just letting you know ahead of time, I'm going to come knocking again, you know. So it's evident from everything I've read about you that you are a strong advocate for empowering midlife women who may be experiencing weight gain, loss of confidence, or other emotional struggles. I like midlife women. I'm a midlife woman, like I said, and I can assure you I've experienced all of the above at one time or another, and I still struggle with others. Can you discuss how a holistic approach, including addressing mental and emotional well-being, plays a crucial role in helping women not only manage menopause, but also regain their self-esteem and inner sparkle? I mean, which woman out there does not want to sparkle and glow, you know?
Yeah, like you say, sparkle. We all want a bit of sparkle, don't we? You know, the majority of clients I work with, I see that nearly all of them have this, you know, they lose their confidence, they develop anxiety, they suddenly start questioning everything. I think that this midlife, something happens in a woman's life. I think the hormones do play, you know, they come into action there, but it isn't just that. I think we come to a phase where we just kind of look back and think, okay, you know, I maybe will live another 30 years. What am I doing with my life? I don't like my career. It's like a peak, isn't it?
Yes.
Really working on mindset. And I think the first thing to do is really to try to embrace the menopause transition with a positive attitude. And I totally appreciate that maybe isn't so easy, you know, mm-hmm. when you're overwhelmed and you're having all these symptoms, you've got a career, you've maybe got children at home. There's a lot going on in a woman's life in midlife. And then you've got the menopause transition on top of that. But really trying to think, okay, this is a new phase in my life. It's a new beginning. And I'm really going to try to get through it with a positive outlook. And interestingly enough, in other cultures in the world, when women are looked up to as midlife, older women are looked up to and the menopause transition is, you know, it's a positive thing.
Right.
They actually have hardly any menopausal symptoms because they're thought of as, you know, the wiser, the women that maybe are going to lead the village. And they're respected, whereas in the Western world, menopause is really, we're so ageism, aren't we?
Right.
We spend all our time on, you know, anti-aging and things to look younger. So it's kind of, you don't want to talk about the menopause because that's a sign that you know, you're getting older, you won't be anymore. So having a positive attitude is crucial. And then, you know, if you are suffering from anxiety, I mean, menopause can trigger off depression. There's some women that really suffer and
right.
don't suffer in silence. I think it's very important that you reach out and ask for help because there's so many different ways that a woman can be supportive, whether it's with hormone replacement therapy. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. You are. You that's your speciality. But if that works for you and mm-hmm. that's something, it can help with emotional issues and really. Understanding that this is just a phase, getting the support, getting the knowledge so you know what you're going through, and really trying to have a positive outlook on life
right.
and having friends. I think it's really important, as I've found this with myself, having girlfriends that you can sit down and just chat to about how you're feeling and, you know, having a good old girls' night and
right.
saying how you feel. That is so therapeutic.
It is, you know, just knowing that you're not alone, hearing other people's stories gives you a level of comfort that, oh gosh, you know, it's not in my head. Other people are experiencing this also. And then you mentioned hormone replacement. I'll touch on that in a little bit about what my experience was with HRT, hormone replacement therapy, which was pretty much what pushed me into looking more at my nutrition.
Are you ready to be part of something extraordinary? A community that empowers women, celebrates their achievements, and supports their dreams? Well, get ready, because Woman of Grit Community is coming soon. That's right, folks. Woman of Grit Community is here to inspire and uplift women from all walks of life. Whether you're an entrepreneur, a professional, a student, or a homemaker, this community is for you. Picture this: a group of like-minded women sharing their stories, exchanging ideas, and forming lifelong connections. Woman of Grit Community is a space where you can network, collaborate, and grow both personally and professionally. And let's not forget the incredible events we have planned. From empowering workshops to insightful discussions, you'll have the opportunity to learn from industry leaders, experts, and fellow trailblazers. So mark your calendars, because Woman of Grit Community is launching this September 2023. Stay tuned for updates on how you can be part of this incredible movement. Follow us on Instagram at Woman of Grit Podcast and keep an ear out for more information in upcoming episodes of Woman of Grit Podcast. Join us as we come together to celebrate the strength, determination, and unwavering spirit of women everywhere. Remember, gritpreneurs, you are unstoppable women of grit. We are here to cheer you on every step of the way.
Woman of Grit Community, empowering women, celebrating achievements, and supporting dreams. Coming this September 2023. Stay tuned.
So let's focus on weight and weight gain. So weight and weight gain during the menopausal period. I often reflect on how much easier it was to lose weight when I was younger. I literally just had to think about it, and I lost 5 to 10 pounds. Now it's like pulling teeth. What are your insights into why it's so difficult to lose weight in midlife during the peri and menopausal period? Some people more than others. I'm one of the ones that do struggle with my weight more now so than when I was younger.
Yeah, I see that as well. It was in so many clients. That's really and it's upsetting, isn't it? You know, you're leading the same life. You're not suddenly increased your food intake. You're exercising, and no matter what you do, this tire around the abdomen area just seems to be growing. And I mean, it's interesting with weight gain in this period in a woman's life, because there's so many different factors that come into play. What we can't forget: the aging process. We can't blame everything on the menopause, but estrogen, as we said earlier, is really has a big control on metabolism. And find that, you know, your metabolism does slow down for the majority of women.
Mine packed up and like literally packed a suitcase and said, I will see you later. Maybe that's why I travel so much. I'm looking for my metabolism. So go ahead.
It really slows down. And, you know, that's one issue. But then, you know, another thing that happens as we age is that we lose muscle mass. When we have less muscle mass on the body, we require less energy. So that adds, you know, to the energy that we're not burning as much energy because we haven't got as much muscle. And, you know, you can't eat what you ate when you were 20 or 30. You can't have those portions anymore. You have to cut back a little bit because of the slowing down in metabolism. Another key area, well, two key areas are blood sugar balance. Insulin resistance in women when we menopause, the likelihood of that increases. And when we have blood sugar imbalances or higher blood sugar, your body produces a hormone called insulin. And insulin is the key, really, that opens up the cell that allows your body to utilize this energy, which is the blood sugar or the sugar in your circulation. If you've got high insulin levels, it's virtually impossible to lose weight because insulin is a fat storing hormone. So blood sugar balance is not only for weight management, it's key for so many things for our overall health.
Right.
You know, as we can see in the world, there's the rate of diabetes too is increasing considerably due to many factors, but one of them is to do with, again, going back to our diets and ultra processed food. So blood sugar management key. Another key area in weight management is stress management. Again, it's very, very difficult to lose weight if you're constantly stressed because of the stress hormone, cortisol.
Cortisol, yes.
When that's released, a fat storing hormone. There's a lot of things playing in here with weight gain. So you really have to look at them all. And that change in our body shape, you know, you go from a pear to an apple, really, don't you? The suddenly the middle area starts to expand. We don't really understand why that is, but there is research to say it could be due to testosterone could play some role in there, because testosterone can become slightly more dominant when estrogen and progesterone levels decline.
Right.
Fat, especially around the abdomen area, is it's actually like an endocrine organ in itself, because it does produce hormones.
Yes.
Will store estrogen in that area if your body feels that, oh, we've not got enough estrogen in circulation, so I'm going to store a little bit of extra around the middle area.
The middle. Mm-hmm.
And that is hard to shift, that sort of fat. Another area is hunger hormones, ghrelin and leptin.
Ghrelin and leptin.
Mm-hmm. Again, that are affected by estrogen and the menopause transition. Sleep. If you're not sleeping, it sets off an array of different things in the body. Stress. We crave carbohydrates when we're tired. So you find if you haven't been sleeping, the day after, you find that you may be reaching for, you know, your refined carbohydrates. Your body's a clever machine. It knows that if I eat this like packet of biscuits or cake, that's going to give me a really quick shot of energy, which you need. I wouldn't advise that you ate that, but you know, your body just wants energy as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Another key area with weight management is thyroid health, and again, goes into menopause, there can be an increase in thyroid issues, particularly hyperthyroidism. And the thyroid is like the engine. It's a gland that sits at the base of your neck, and it's the engine of the body that runs, you know, many things, but really is effective on your metabolism and the thyroid hormones. So unexplained weight gain, I would always recommend to have your thyroid levels tested.
Looked at.
Yeah.
Well, mine was tested. This is fine. You know, so I was looking for some other reason other than everything else you just mentioned, you know. But so for me, my thyroid was fine. As you were talking, I said the six pillars of lifestyle medicine and menopause are so intricately linked. You have the, you know, one of the pillars is whole foods. You have physical activity, stress management. You have sleep. You have your relationships, healthy relationships. And then, of course, avoiding substances. Alcohol is definitely one of those. And how working on each of those six pillars can help to alleviate menopause. So, I mean, you literally just, as you were going along, you're just checking them off. So I just wrote down title for an episode, of Woman of Grit podcast, you know, with menopause and the six pillars of lifestyle medicine. So earlier I shared how Changing my diet, nutrition helped reduce my hot flushes, so much so that by the end of the 6-month period, I no longer needed to have my fan running constantly, for which I am very grateful. I tried hormone replacement pills. I had nausea with it. I tried patches and they tore up my skin. I have these black marks all over my belly and thighs. So I was relieved that my experiment with my diet helped me. What are some lifestyle modifications, including nutrition, that can help women feel better? If there's anything else that you wanted to add, and then we'll move on to the next area.
When it comes to weight management, I think, you know, really, exactly as you were saying, you have to look at your sleep. You need to move. It doesn't have to be going to the gym for a couple of hours a day. It just as long as you move, you know, do what you enjoy doing, because you will do it every day. But you need to incorporate some sort of movement, because as we age as well, we tend to become more sedentary. And that obviously doesn't help with many things, including weight gain. So just doing, even if it's just going for a walk, 10-minute walk a day, and standing up, you know, if you sit at a desk,
right,
move around, take breaks.
Yes.
Your body was designed to move. It's such a crucial thing in overall health is movement. And like I say, finding something that you enjoy, so you will do it every day, and particularly strength training, so lifting, right, things. Really need that for bone health, which is another area that menopausal women need to look after their bone health, and then stress management, portion control, you know, looking at how much you're eating. Obviously you need to look at what you're eating,
right,
a balanced plate, you know. Even if you're eating healthy foods, you need to have protein, healthy whole grain carbohydrates from vegetables or from whole grains. And then, you know, your lovely healthy fats. We need fat for hormone production, mm-hmm, and for our overall health. Fat,
right,
is another area that I grew up in. Fat was like, ooh, a swear word. You know, nobody, yes, everything's low fat, but we need the health. It's the type of fat you eat, like, you know, avocados, olive oil, nuts and seeds, all of those lovely oils we need. So you need to eat fat with every meal. And mm-hmm, if you protein, of course, protein's key. Women in general don't really eat enough protein.
Right. But
if you eat a balanced plate, you'll find that you won't feel as hungry. If you're just mm-hmm, carbohydrates, that spikes your blood sugar, and you go into this like roller coaster ride, mm-hmm, of craving sugar. So, you know, just stop eating ultra processed foods. That's mm-hmm, probably and I know it's not easy, it's very easy to say that, but actually doing it is difficult because it's addictive.
You talked about that spike, you know, and you mentioned it before, where we think of insulin as helping to push the glucose into the cells where they're needed. But with that spike of insulin comes what you mentioned already, the fat storage. So the more spikes you have, the more fat is stored. So it's not just you're spiking your blood sugar, you're also spiking your fat storage. So definitely those two go together.
Other thing here that I find fascinating, and this is, I mean, I wouldn't advise that you do this unless you talk to your healthcare provider, because it's not suitable for everybody. But I've seen with some clients that are suitable for it is the intermittent fasting. You know, it's really your eating window. And I've seen, if it suits the client, like I say, it's not mm-hmm, for everybody. It's certainly not for anyone that has disordered eating or diabetes or you know, many different health complaints. What it basically is that you just don't eat all day. Our right, bodies weren't designed to eat constantly and snack. So, you know, mm-hmm, you close your eating window. So, for example, you maybe you wake up in the morning and you don't eat your first meal till 12 o'clock, and then you're eating the same amount of food. It's just that you're eating it in a shorter period of time. Research shows that the 16-8 window tends to be the most effective. However, if you just start with what suits you,
right,
just the gap between not eating just increase that. And it's been shown mm-hmm. to give amazing results in blood sugar balance, in particular in weight management. Mm-hmm. Another fascinating area is the autophagy, where your body, when you're in a fasting state, it's kind of like your body
right.
this cleaning mode, doesn't it? It's kind of spring cleaning yes. for your cells. I find that fascinating.
Absolute. And you know, I had to learn all of this when I was getting ready to take my lifestyle medicine boards. And I was reading stuff. I was like, I didn't learn this in medical school. Definitely. I went to an obesity conference about 2 years ago. And all of this stuff you just mentioned, we talked about. For me, intermittent fasting, I am familiar with it. And more, even within clinical medicine, there is data to back intermittent fasting as a viable option to help with weight management. So definitely, like you said, we were not meant to eat round the clock. Snacking is something I learned to do in the Western world. I grew up in Africa and we had our three meals a day. And in between, we were outside playing. You were just not constantly snacked. Our pantry wasn't stocked with snacks. My snack growing up was fruit, and the fruit came right off the tree, mangoes and oranges and stuff. That was snack time for us, avocados, not the cakes and the biscuits and the soft drinks. No. So definitely changing the way I used to eat when I was younger certainly has been a factor in where I find myself. I can't blame everything on menopause. Definitely. The next thing I was going to talk about was stress. Reducing stress is one of the pillars of lifestyle medicine and one of the six areas that can be addressed with therapeutic lifestyle intervention. Stress affects everyone from time to time, and not all stress is harmful. However, high levels of stress over time can negatively affect our mental and physical health and may even be a risk factor for depression or anxiety. You already mentioned that I suffered from anxiety, especially during a period when my stress levels were so, so high. I was going through a separation and a divorce. Of course, people experience stress in different ways. You know, for me, my heart racing was how I experienced my stress. Some people have headaches, sleep problems, anger, stomach issues, sadness. Can you share with our listeners your insights into how stress affects women, especially during their midlife period, and some ways to manage it?
Yeah, stress is such a huge area, isn't it? And unfortunately, it feels in society today that the majority of people are suffering from chronic stress. And yes. as you were saying, stress, you know, stress isn't all bad. Small amounts of stress are actually quite good for us. But when it's that constant stress and your body's releasing the stress hormones, you know, as we spoke earlier, it affects blood sugar. It affects our ability to digest food. You know, we're as humans, when we're stressed, our body thinks that we need to run away from something. So it gets your body ready for that and shuts down everything that isn't needed. All you need to do is to be able to run, you know, to get right. away from danger, which
so
obviously
the flight yeah, response, the flight yes.
response. Mm-hmm. And it can trigger off many things, as you said, like sleep and hormone imbalances, weight gain, etc. When I work with clients, what we do is, because everyone's stress is very individual, mm-hmm. we do what I call a stress audit. And I think the most important thing is that you have to admit that you are stressed and stress is affecting your life, because we're all so busy and we think, oh, I can't do that. I'll look after myself like next week, and then next week comes and you don't. But
right.
you have to take control of your stress management. Otherwise, in the future, you know, it's quite likely that you will be forced to, because you will become ill or you'll become overwhelmed or depressed.
Right.
A great thing, very easy thing to do that I've had really good results with clients is breath work. Just breathing. Mm-hmm. That is such a key thing to managing stress. Just taking a deep breath, because when you do breathing, it's actually very hard to be stressed because you send a signal to your brain telling your body that everything is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Taking, there's lots of different types of breath work, but just taking a few deep breaths, if you can feel that overwhelming feeling coming on, and that really just helps to reset and calm down the body. Taking time out for yourself, self-care, is crucial. It really should be something that you put into your calendar, into your diary.
Right.
Do it, even if it's for 10 minutes, 15 minutes a day. And that could just involve going for a walk, just sitting down, looking out of a window, drinking a cup of tea, just going away and doing something that you enjoy,
right.
Having a bath or phoning a friend. Stress management doesn't, if you can do meditation and yoga, wonderful, because they are very, very beneficial, but not everybody has that amount of time to do these things. It's time out, isn't it? It's taking all the stimulants away from your brain, because we live in a
society
where, you know, you've got screens, you've got mobiles, you've got social media. It's your brain is constantly all over the place. You need to just step back and really look at your life and take control of what's going on before you actually become ill.
People think, you know, it's cliche, stop and smell the roses, but just literally just stopping, appreciating what is around you. Sometimes I just sit here and I listen to the birds chirping, and it's so beautiful, but they don't stop chirping. I just don't hear them until I actually slow things down and stop and listen. They're out there chirping, you know? So yeah. Anything else?
Yeah, I mean, stress is what I find with clients is it's such a individual area. And the last thing I want to do is, you know, say, oh, it would be beneficial if you do this and this and this. And then they become even more stressed.
Exactly. Exactly.
So I think it's all about small steps. It's difficult to change habits. So start just with one thing. You know, it doesn't have to be a big thing. Just start by taking 4 or 5 deep breaths when you start to feel anxious or stressed. And, you know, do that for a week. Don't try to incorporate so many different changes at once, because it won't last. It's all
and
about
you're stressed out. Yeah, you get more stressed out.
A habit is difficult. And there's interesting research on habit forming, and I've actually tried this with a few clients, and it's really worked that if you want to create a new habit, if you attach it onto an old habit. So, for example, if you think of, you know, brushing your teeth, that is actually a habit. But we all do it and we don't think about it, do we? We would never not brush our teeth. So the new habit, if you connect that onto brushing your teeth. So, for example, if you want to do some sit-ups, you want to be doing 20 sit-ups a day. If you do those before you brush your teeth or after, but have that kind of as one routine,
right,
stick more often. I have a great example of that. I have some dumbbells in the kitchen near the kettle, so every time I drink tea, which I do a lot of because I'm British, you pick the dumbbells up. And while the kettle's boiling, you know, you lift them and you can actually view. And that is the routine that I've had in place. And when I put the kettle on, I automatically reach for these dumbbells now.
Mm-hmm.
And it does. It's creating a new habit around an old habit.
And I actually use the brushing of teeth when I have patients who just started taking, say, medication for blood pressure. I say, put your blood pressure medicine on the way to going into the bathroom, because you probably don't want to put it in an environment that's moist, but you tie those two together. So it's like you brush your teeth, right? Okay, good, good. Well, on your way to brushing your teeth, you take your medicine, or as soon as you finish brushing your teeth, you take your medicine. So definitely tying that new habit, which is they're starting on medication, to an old habit that they've been doing all their lives. So definitely that is a way to do it. So we've covered a lot of ground today on lifestyle interventions that benefit women in their midlife period. Is there anything else that you would like to share with the listeners that I did not touch on? Anything that maybe was in your head that I didn't cover?
I think we spoke about most things. Just one other thing is phytoestrogen-rich foods. I think phytoestrogens are basically plant estrogens. Mm-hmm. They're found in things like flax seeds, soya products, a lot of fruits and vegetables. And the research on that, then it's not estrogen, but it has a similar chemical structure to mm-hmm. estrogen. And they've been shown to be not only very rich in fiber, so, you know, they're very good for us, but they can help to suppress certain menopausal symptoms. Mm-hmm. Linseeds are wonderful. You know, you can have them in what you have for your breakfast. You know, you can sprinkle them over a salad. One key thing with linseeds is just make sure you crush them, because if you actually eat them whole, they basically just go straight through your body.
Your system, you can either
crush them or soak them in water for 24 hours. Mm. But phytoestrogens are a very good nutrient source for women because of the phytoestrogen content and also fiber content there. And I think
I just wanted to a caveat that in terms of women who are listening, of course, this we're talking in generalities. If your doctor has said to probably avoid foods with phytoestrogens like soy, I know I have friends who, because of breast cancer, maybe estrogen sensitive breast cancer, they're recommending that they avoid some of the foods with the phytoestrogen. We're generally talking about women who don't have any of those indications. So definitely listen to your provider. We're just talking here in terms of, you know, generalities, not specifics for, say, a woman who has estrogen sensitive malignancy. So yeah, go ahead.
Good point. I just really wanted to say that it's just so important that women embrace this time in their life with a positive attitude, and, you know, don't regret growing old.
Mm-hmm. It's absolutely
a privilege, and it's a privilege denied to many.
Yes, that is so true. I'm looking forward to celebrating my 60th birthday, and I'm pleased to say more and more among my peers, among the women I know, more and more of these women are celebrating their 60th birthday out in public. Before, it seemed like women, we stopped aging at maybe 40, maybe 50, but now women are celebrating their birthdays. I just celebrated my aunt. She turned 70. She looks fabulous. I think more and more we're owning our midlife, you know, so don't mess with us midlife women now.
No, that's fabulous. I totally agree.
Yes.
Midlife women, older women, we're amazing. We've got so much knowledge.
Yeah.
So much to give. And we're gorgeous. There's this
fabulous
as we get older. So, you know.
I had one guest talked about the rites of passage and how in indigenous societies, those things are celebrated. There are ceremonies for going through those rites of passage. And definitely in African society, we do celebrate that rite of passage, the birth and then puberty. Not so much the menopause, you know, and she did mention the archetypes, the crone, the older woman, the sage, you know, more and more celebrated. In African culture, we do celebrate the sage, the older woman who is wise, and, you know, we seek her advice. So yeah, I think as time goes on, we are owning our midlife, you know. So I'll have information in the show notes and in the episode webpage. But before we go, where can listeners find you to learn more about you and the services that you do offer? Because I do believe this work you do is so much needed. It's relevant. It's timely. Where can listeners find you to learn more?
The best place really is on my website, which is alisonblad.com, and that's BLADH. On there that you can find all my social media links. I'm virtually on all social media, but Alison Blad. And then I also have a resources page on my website where you can download free ebooks. And there's lots of ebooks on different, you know, for weight management, for skin health, and lots of recipes and meal plans to really just give you some ideas of how you should be eating to improve your health. So if any of your listeners want to download anything there, please feel free.
I will have that link in the show notes. So it has been an absolute pleasure having you. And I am pretty sure, I promise you, not that I'll be back, because once I dive a little bit more into lifestyle medicine, I will reach out to you. So listeners, I hope you really get a lot out of this episode. And so Alison Blad, it has been a pleasure having you on the Woman of Grit podcast, and I look forward to talking to you again. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure. And I look forward to coming back and having another discussion with you. Thank you so much.
All righty then. Take care.
So that's it for today's episode of Woman of Grit. Thank you for joining us, and don't miss the next episode in 1 week. And while you're waiting, you can catch up on previous episodes of our podcast on your favorite listening platforms, which you can access from our website, womanofgritpodcast.com. While on the website, you can learn more about today's guest and all our previous guests. Make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and rate the show to help us reach more listeners, so we can continue bringing you these incredible stories of women who have overcome challenges with grit and determination. Thank you for your support. And until next week, remain ever gritful and never quit. It's always darkest before dawn, but light comes in the morning. Take care.